This is Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Arms linked, a crowd of 300 marched today from downtown Atlanta and through the neighborhoods where Martin Luther King Jr. grew up to honor the civil rights leader's legacy on the 40th anniversary of his historic I Have a Dream speech. Stand up for what is right always, said State Senator Mary Squires as she spoke to the crowd that gathered in Woodruff Park before the march. What's in your head? Don't let it stop you from saying what's in your heart. Political and community leaders, including presidential candidate Al Sharpton, led the march through Atlanta's historic Sweet Auburn district to a rally at the Martin Luther King National Historic Site. Representative John Lewis, who helped organize the original March on Washington in 1963, was to deliver the keynote address. In Washington, Martin Luther King III addressed the National Press Club and updated his late father's 40-year-old dream for racial equality, and with a call for universal health care, economic parity for minorities, and the elimination of capital punishment. Well, a voice that has enriched our lives and called us to the best of ourselves for over four decades continues to inspire and challenge us to be more. Richie Havens joins Peace Watch today to discuss his latest album and share his unique perspective of the United States of America.
I think basically my politics, if I have any, it's a politic toward the America that is becoming, because basically I grew up in Brooklyn through the 50s as a teenager, and basically it was at that time when my whole generation realized what kind of world we were really in, and that meant for us that America actually had not begun yet, and that it was still in the becoming. So I'm of the becoming politics.
Have we arrived yet?
Oh, no, not for sure. We haven't. But we have made incredible strides towards it.
And you've written music over three decades.
Mm-hmm.
Your music has been a part of the movement for social change in America,
mm-hmm.
or I guess you might articulate it as the becoming of America.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a single event or cause that stands out from all the rest for you?
Well, you know, I think the last and latest, of course, was the marches across the country against our current problems overseas, and I think that was an incredible indication for me as to how far we actually have come.
Mm.
When grandmothers bring their grandkids and their children to march, having never done it before. We see many families now at least acknowledging to their children the kind of world we actually are in.
And so you're speaking of the anti-war movement.
Yes.
Against the war in Iraq.
Yes,
that we're
against
currently
war
in.
Period, mm-hmm. actually. You know, I think that's how they radicalized us in the 60s, is that we were against the Vietnam War. We were against all wars. It was pro-peace rather than anti-war.
How many anti-war songs have you sung over the years?
Oh, gosh.
What's your favorite?
Oh, gosh. I guess a third of the songs I sing are about that type of unbecoming.
Hmm. And so which one's your favorite?
I don't have a favorite. They all speak about our common problem, and I think that's really what it's about. It's really not about my problem. It's mm-hmm. about all of our problem. And I still have to sing Freedom. I guess I've sung it every day since I sang it at Woodstock.
Yes.
I only tried once not to sing it, and that didn't work.
Now, I know you were the opening act at Woodstock, mm-hmm. and you held the crowd absolutely spellbound for 3 hours when you were called back for yet another encore. You improvised.
Well, I wish it would. It could have been all of those were encores, mm-hmm. but actually, you know, I was the only one there on the field, and they were having a very hard time getting any other entertainer there, which is why they kept saying, can you do three more? So I ended up 2 hours and 45 minutes on stage singing every song I knew.
But so, but now one, what I've read about that moment in history was that that was when you were called back to do one more, you used the old spiritual motherless child.
Yes, you know, that that too was an unexpected thing for me because I, you know, if you listen to the record, I play a long intro. It's called Richie Havens Stalling to try to figure out what are the song there is to sing that I knew. You know, I sang doo-wop in my earlier life, but I wasn't going to revert to that. So actually, it started with the words freedom because I was sitting on that stage looking out over at that particular time, which was 560,000 people. That was the first day. Mm. Now, of course, the newspapers said it was only 250 there, but we knew better, as we always do. And the opportunity to see the freedom that we were all seeking happening right in front of me.
And so how did that song go?
That's how it began.
How does that song go?
Well, it starts off with freedom as the sort of what came out of my mouth. And then it went into Motherless Child, which I hadn't sung in about 12 years. So that was a big surprise for me as well as the audience. If it was a surprise to them at all, they probably thought I sang it that way. The fact of the matter is, I didn't even realize what I had done, having sung all of my songs, until I saw the movie about a year and a half later. It was from that day on that I had to sing it every day.
Since this is the 40th anniversary of the March on Washington, did Dr. King's words in his famous I Have a Dream speech have any influence on you, Richie Havens?
Oh, absolutely. I think he had an influence on everybody who came to that thing, and everybody who heard it after it was broadcasted, and all of the people who adopted it in schools to just use as a template.
What did it
of
say?
Activism.
What did it say specifically to you?
Well, it said that someone at least was standing up and speaking not only for the African American but for the citizens of states that might have been under the gun of what we might call the opposition. I mean, if you could imagine in this nation that the civil rights of African Americans in the South actually didn't even take a turn to be addressed until the middle 50s. So we can possibly say that we had been the non-country, the non-constitutional country, up until that point. So we begin to learn that we do have rights that we can stick up for. Not that we should have to stick up for them, because they were already written down. But that, in fact, human beings were standing in the way. It's just like this thing with the Ten Commandments that is happening now.
Yes.
I see that as a type of bigotry in and of itself.
How so?
Well, because of the fact of what is trying to be done, how one man is going to go above the law of the nation and the Constitution of the nation and put what he thinks needs to be in some position of prominence, which is his own religion. Now, the Constitution clearly says that that's not supposed to happen. Well, if you're going to say, well, heck with the Constitution, then you have to still ask, what country are we in, if he can do that and get away with it?
Yes, indeed, you do. Richie Havens, we are so honored to have you. I now know why your music and you are a national treasure as far as we're concerned. And we want to sincerely thank you. And I'm looking through this brochure of your CD, The Wishing Well. And one song that sort of sticks out is You'll Never Know. What inspired that song?
Well, the fact that we are in such, we have been kept in such a stupor, not knowing, purposefully. the less we know, the more inactive we are, the less we think we have a way to towards action. So I think that that song is about the personal never knowing. When you hear it, it's something you have to think about personally.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any final thoughts on your part, Richie Haven?
Well, my final thoughts is that we're doing pretty darn well in getting to the point these days.
Mm-hmm.
We can't get actually past the basic news in the press out there because they tend to be just echoing the problem we have as a good rather than as curious.
Richie Havens, artist, writer, folk singer, guitarist extraordinaire. His latest album is Wishing Well, from which we offer We'll Never Know.
Do the dance, dangle on the string, make believe that everything is real. Lost in trance, they make a song, dance along, and that's the way it is. Stand against the wind, crying in the rain, let the games begin. Pain is always pain, is always pain. We will let time tell us that that's the way it is. Just one little smile, this whole world has changed a thousand times. Yet in a breeze, this whole world can be gone. Can't you see that something wrong? That's the way it is. I believe that's the way it is. I believe that's the way it is.
Richie Havens, our special guest today on Peace Watch. Well, today is, of course, the 40th anniversary of the March on Washington, where several hundred thousand people from all walks of life gathered at the foot of the Lincoln Memorial to demand that this country put an end to legalized segregation and racial injustice. The keynote speech was given by a young minister whose eloquence and passion engaged the nation. The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. gave what is now known as his famous I Have a Dream speech, which we now present.
I am happy to join with you today in what will go down in history as the greatest demonstration for freedom in the history of our nation. Five score years ago, a great American in whose symbolic shadow we stand today signed the Emancipation Proclamation. This momentous decree came as a great beacon light of hope to millions of Negro slaves who had been seared in the flames of withering injustice. But 100 years later, the Negro still is not free. 100 years later, the life of the Negro is still sadly crippled by the manacles of segregation and the chains of discrimination. 100 years later, the Negro lives on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. 100 years later, the Negro is still languished in the corners of American society and finds himself in exile in his own land. And so we've come here today to dramatize a shameful condition. In a sense, we've come to our nation's capital to cash a check. When the architects of our republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they were signing a promissory note to which every American was to fall heir. This note was a promise that all men would be guaranteed the unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It is obvious today that America has defaulted on this promissory note insofar as her citizens of color are concerned. Instead of honoring this sacred obligation, America has given the Negro people a bad check, a check which has come back marked insufficient funds. But we refuse to believe that the Bank of Justice is bankrupt. We refuse to believe that there are insufficient funds in the great vaults of opportunity of this nation. And so we've come to cash this check, a check that will give us upon demand the riches of freedom and the security of justice. We have also come to this hallowed spot to remind America of the fierce urgency of now. This is no time to engage in the luxury of cooling off or to take the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. Now is the time to make real the promises of democracy. Now is the time to rise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation to the sunlit path of racial justice. Now is the time to lift our nation from the quicksands of racial injustice to the solid rock of brotherhood. Now is the time to make justice a reality for all of God's children. This sweltering summit of the Negro's legitimate discontent will not pass until that is an invigorating autumn of freedom and equality. 1963 is not an end, but a beginning. Those who hope that the Negro needed to blow off steam will have a rude awakening if the nation returns to business as usual. There will be neither rest nor tranquility in America until the Negro is granted his citizenship rights. The whirlwinds of revolt will continue to shake the foundations of our nation until the bright day of justice emerges. But that is something that I must say to my people who stand on the warm threshold which leads into the palace of justice. In the process of gaining our rightful place, we must not be guilty of wrongful deeds. Let us not seek to satisfy our thirst for freedom by drinking from the cup of bitterness and hatred. We must forever conduct our struggle on the high plane of dignity and discipline. A again and again, we must rise to the majestic heights of meeting physical force with soul force. The marvelous new militancy which has engulfed the Negro community must not lead us to a distrust of all white people. For many of our white brothers, as evidenced by their presence here today, have come to realize that their destiny is tied up with our destiny. And they have come to realize that their freedom is inextricably bound to our freedom. We cannot walk alone. And as we walk, we must make the pledge that we shall always march ahead. We cannot turn back. There are those who are asking the devotees of civil rights, when will you be satisfied? We can never be satisfied as long as the Negro is the victim of the unspeakable horrors of police brutality. We can never be satisfied. As long as our bodies, heavy with the fatigue of travel, cannot gain lodging in the motels of the highways and the hotels of the cities. We cannot be satisfied as long as the Negro's basic mobility is from a smaller ghetto to a larger one. We can never be satisfied as long as our children are stripped of their selfhood and robbed of their dignity by signs stating for whites only. We cannot be satisfied as long as a Negro in Mississippi cannot vote and a Negro in New York believes he has nothing for which to vote. No, we are not satisfied, and we will not be satisfied until justice rolls down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. I am not unmindful that some of you have come here out of great trials and tribulations. Some of you have come from areas where your quest for freedom left you battered by the storms of persecution and staggered by the winds of police brutality. You have been the veterans of creative suffering. Continue to work with the faith that unearned suffering is redemptive. Go back to Mississippi. Go back to Alabama, go back to South Carolina, go back to Georgia, go back to Louisiana, go back to the slums and ghettos of our northern cities. Yes. Knowing that somehow this situation can and will be changed. Yes. Let us not wallow in the valley of despair. I say to you today, my friend, so even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. Yes. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. Yes. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. Yeah. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day, even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice, I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama, with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted. And every hill and mountain shall be made low. The rough places will be made plain. And the crooked places will be made straight. And the glory of the Lord shall be revealed. And all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day. This will be the day when all of God's children will be able to sing with new meaning, "My country, tears of thee. Sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. And so let freedom ring. From the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire, let freedom ring. From the mighty mountains of New York, let freedom ring. From the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania, let freedom ring. From the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado, let freedom ring. From the curvaceous slopes of California. But not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring, and when this happens, and when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, "Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last."
The late Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. on August 28, 1963, 40 years ago at the March on Washington. Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington, D.C. Our producer is Scott Gurian. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our engineer is T. from the Pattersons taking the train to Tibet. Our associate producer is Angelique Shofar. We had production assistance from Jim Bennett and Otto Hammond of KPFA, Benta Berkland, Tom Gomez, Robert West, and Kenny Shook. I'm Verna Avery Brown, the executive producer. Thank you for listening.